Marijuana has been controversial for a long, long time in America, even as portrayed in the 1930s film Reefer Madness.
Stop that racket! Stop it!
What's the matter with you? Give me the creeps.
May. May!
What do you want?
Bring me some reefers.
But in recent years, even recent months, there has been more and more acceptance of marijuana, with states and communities decriminalizing, even legalizing its recreational use. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, April the 3rd. We will talk with a guest researcher who says there is still a lot of misinformation about marijuana out there and much more to learn about how it affects people. We'll talk about the evidence for and against marijuana usage, the controversies around pot laws, and the challenges of treating addictions. And we'll welcome your thoughts and your questions. Do you support or oppose the legalization of marijuana? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Kevin Hill, an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard's McLean Hospital in Belmont, Massachusetts. He's also an addiction consultant with several professional sports organizations. He is the author of Marijuana, the Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. Good morning.
Thanks for having me on, Joy.
Well, we'll get into more details later, but how would you describe the state of marijuana usage in the U.S. today?
Well, I think there's a battle over marijuana going on right now in our country. There are passionate people on both sides of the debate. There's a strong anti-marijuana lobby, and similarly, there are people that are very much for increased access to marijuana. But the point that I try to make in the book is that in order to be successful from either a clinical perspective or from a policy perspective, I think you have to understand that the truth about marijuana lies in the middle. From a clinical perspective, if I have a young person coming in who uses marijuana every day, I need to understand why they're doing this. What is the perceived benefit of marijuana? If I were to take a stack of scientific papers and toss it across the desk at them and say, what are you thinking? I'm not going to get anywhere. And similarly, from a policy perspective, I think what we've seen play out in state after state is you have both sides of the debate digging their heels in without any compromise. And the result, unfortunately, is regulations that just don't work.
Yeah, your book's subtitle refers to the world's most popular weed. How prevalent is its usage in the U.S. and, for that matter, on a global scale?
So marijuana around the world is the most popularly used illicit drug, and in the United States. In the United States last year, around 19 million Americans used marijuana. So it's everywhere, and as we've talked about, the issues related to marijuana policy are not going away. So I think it's critical at this point that we understand more about this drug so we can be more informed about the choices we make.
Let's touch on some of the basics before we go much further. Let's talk about the lingo first to make sure we're all on the same page.
Sure.
Cannabis, marijuana, hemp, THC, they're all related but not synonymous. Can you briefly explain the key terms that we need to know?
Well, I like to talk about marijuana. So we're talking about the marijuana plant itself, which is made up of over 60 cannabinoids. So cannabinoids are the components of marijuana. We talk in the United States really about two of those components. So you mentioned THC. So the major active ingredient in marijuana is delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC. That's what makes you high. On the flip side, it can also make you psychotic. You could have a bad reaction to marijuana. Cannabidiol, or CBD, is what more and more people have become familiar with. That is not psychoactive, and it may have anti-anxiety or antipsychotic properties, frankly. And so there are a lot of medicinal, potentially effective reasons to use cannabinoids and marijuana. But again, you have to be clear about which pieces of the plant you're trying to use.
Well, tell us about the early days of marijuana use. How did we go from this marijuana plant to something that people were smoking or cooking with?
Well, marijuana has been used in around the world for over 5,000 years. Asia, you know, I think it was 2900 BC, people began using it medicinally. So in Asia, Europe, and even in the United States, really in colonial times, so the times of George Washington, mid-1700s, people were using marijuana, you know, the hemp for rope and things of that kind. But really what we've been concerned with lately has been talk of using it medicinally and also recreationally, and I think that that has developed over time. Certainly in the United States in the 1800s, it was generally accepted as a legitimate medical treatment, and then as we progressed into the early 1900s or so, there was a leader of the Bureau of Narcotics named Henry Anslinger, who really was influential in turning the tide against marijuana. You led this show off with the movie mm-hmm. Reefer Madness that came out in 1936, I believe, which stemmed the tide, or excuse me, really turned the tide against marijuana, and really was somewhat over the top. I think a lot of people who have seen that movie understand that that is not very realistic. But then as the 50s came around, things turned again towards a positive view of marijuana, and 70s people are familiar with increased use of marijuana, and so we've gradually got to the point where we are now. But I think recently, in the last 5-10 years, the issues of medical marijuana have come to the fore, and certainly now, in addition to medical marijuana, state after state is considering the legalization of the recreational use of marijuana. So it's been a very popular drug in the United States for a long time, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Well, yeah, I this is dating me, but I do remember seeing Reefer Madness. I'm not sure, I can't remember if it was in part you know, like social studies of this, or if it was to try to convince my classmates not to smoke marijuana. I recall, you know, I don't know, it was almost like they're treating marijuana as though it was like LSD, like you're on an LSD trip if you would smoke marijuana.
Yeah, I think the movie was really designed to use scare tactics to keep people from using marijuana. And I think, unfortunately, one of the things that comes up, I do a lot of work in schools, that it really depends on how you deliver information. So if you were to come into schools today and relay the message that any marijuana use will lead you on the road to ruin and that you're doomed if you use marijuana, kids understand that that's not the case, that most people who use marijuana don't have problems, despite the fact that some people do become addicted. And so there really is a credibility issue that depends upon how you deliver your message. And I think, unfortunately, while people are well-meaning when they try to educate kids about marijuana, at times they sort of go off the rails, and that's when kids really tune them out.
Yeah. Well, so you can become addicted to marijuana. I always thought that it was not necessarily a physically addictive substance.
Well, Joy, that's one of the reasons that I wrote the book. I think, you know, in doing this for several years, I was struck by the tremendous gap between the science and the public perception. And so just to be clear, most people who use marijuana do not develop problems with it. So it's about 9% of adults who use marijuana become addicted. So that's psychologically addicted and physically addicted. So if you're using marijuana daily, multiple times a day, and you try to stop, you do have physical symptoms. So 9% of adults have that when they use marijuana regularly. And then similarly, about 17% of young people who use marijuana ultimately become addicted. So while when we're talking about out of 19 million Americans who use, if 9% become addicted, that's a large number, 3 million people or so. So as I like to say, a small fraction of a large number can be a very large number. However, it's always important to keep in mind that despite the fact there may be many people who have problems with marijuana, most people who use don't, which makes it a very complicated issue because people understand that, you know, it can be used responsibly like alcohol is.
Yeah, and we have just a minute before a newscast. Is there another big myth that you want to bust when it comes to marijuana usage?
Well, I think one of the problems is again, in the United States, people try to paint things as good or bad, black or white, and so there are many people out there right now that think that marijuana is harmless. It's not harmless, especially for younger people who are using it as their brains are developing, early regular use, so nearly daily use of marijuana, you know, leads to cognitive difficulties, can worsen anxiety, worsen depression, and if you have a family history of a psychotic disorder like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder with psychotic features, you're more likely to express that. So there is certainly quite a bit of risk associated with use among young people, which is why I think the message for young people, at least, needs to be very clear that we don't want them to use it because, you know, they're running the risk of having significant problems.
We will talk more about that after we check the latest news. We are talking with Dr. Kevin Hill. He is the author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Dr. Kevin Hill, who is an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard's McLean Hospital, and he is also the author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. And we are discussing the evidence for and against marijuana usage, and for that matter, the decriminalization and or medical use of marijuana. What questions do you have, and what views do you have on this? Are you okay with the increased acceptance of marijuana, the communities and states that are decriminalizing it, even legalizing it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's talk, Dr. Hill, a little bit about we're talking a little bit about some of the myths when it comes to marijuana. You lay out three myths in the books: that marijuana is not harmful. You say that's a myth, that it cannot lead to addiction. Another myth, and stopping pot does not cause withdrawal. We didn't talk much about that, so that's related to the addiction, I take it.
Yes, it is. So, again, one of the things that people often believe is that marijuana is not physically addictive, and it can be. Again, we're not talking about most people who use marijuana, but for about 9% of adults who use, they do develop a both psychological and physical addiction, and so that withdrawal is associated with the physical piece. If you're using marijuana every day, usually multiple times a day, and you try to stop, you have physical symptoms, anxiety, irritability, can be difficulty sleeping and that sort of thing, akin to what you would have when you try to stop smoking cigarettes. And I think that that's one of the things that I talk about with patients who are trying to change their marijuana use, and that allows them to have a better chance to be able to stop, because when people try to stop on their own and they're not anticipating physical symptoms, it becomes much more difficult. So just giving them that information allows them to be in a better place to try to stop, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm running a couple of clinical trials here developing medications that are designed to try to limit some of those withdrawal symptoms that people have.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about medical marijuana. We have had a bill in Wisconsin for many years trying to legalize the medicinal use of marijuana. It has not passed yet. How does marijuana work in our bodies to bring relief to certain ailments, or does it?
Well, I think it can for some medical conditions. I think medical marijuana is a great example of the difference between ideas and implementation. So we can have a spirited debate about certain ideas about decriminalization or medical marijuana or legalized recreational marijuana, but there isn't much debate about how things have been implemented in the United States so far. So very few people are pleased with how medical marijuana has been implemented in the 23 states in the district that have it, for example. So, unfortunately, at this point, there is quite a difference between what the science says about medical marijuana and what the laws say. So the science says that, yes, in fact, medical marijuana and cannabinoids can be effective for really about five things. We actually have two cannabinoids. I mentioned earlier that marijuana is comprised of cannabinoids. Two cannabinoids approved by the FDA for, number one, nausea and vomiting associated with cancer chemotherapy, and number two, appetite stimulation in certain illnesses like HIV. But there are other conditions as well that have pretty strong data, and those would be, number one, chronic pain, number two, neuropathic pain associated with a kind of a burning sensation in your nerves, and then number three, muscle spasticity associated with multiple sclerosis. So it's my belief that those three conditions will have additional FDA approvals with new cannabinoids within the next several years. So it's much too simplistic to just dismiss the entire idea about medical marijuana, say the whole thing's a sham, because there actually are places where it may make sense for your physician to work with you and to use marijuana, not as a first-line treatment, but potentially as a second or third-line treatment. However, one of the problems that we have is that there are many, many people around the United States that have medical marijuana cards or certifications that don't have one of those illnesses. So there are many medical conditions for which you can use medical marijuana that have little or no evidence to support the use of marijuana for that condition. And that's one of the problems that we have.
Yeah. Let's we have lots of callers who have questions for you, but before we go to the calls, let's talk about some other marijuana policy issues. 23
Sure.
states and the District of Columbia have laws that legalize marijuana in some form. Some states have also decriminalized small amounts of marijuana. First, what is the difference between legalization and decriminalization?
So the idea behind decriminalization is that you still may have a civil penalty associated with using amounts of marijuana in public, but there's no criminal penalty to it. So the way that it often plays out, again, the difference between ideas and implementation, I believe that decriminalization is a good idea. The idea that if there is somebody who's using a small amount of marijuana personally, then they shouldn't be penalized criminally for the possession of that small amount of marijuana. The problem is that most of the decriminalization laws talk about possession of 1 ounce of marijuana or less. And so 1 ounce of marijuana is actually quite a bit of marijuana. Marijuana is a dried plant product, and you can, you know, if we're talking about joints, according to the World Health Organization, a typical joint is half a gram to a gram, 28 grams in an ounce, so 56 joints or so an ounce of marijuana. So what I often say is that if you're carrying around 40 to 50 joints worth of marijuana, is that personal use marijuana? I would say no. So, again, I think the way that those ideas have been implemented has been problematic. Medical marijuana, as we talked about, using marijuana for specific medical purposes as supervised by a physician. And then the legalization is legalized recreational use of marijuana. So that's talking about using marijuana as we do alcohol now. And so that's present currently in four states in the United States, plus the District of Columbia, and more states are considering that as we move forward.
And you wrote you do not support legalization. Why not?
Well, actually, that's not true. I actually do support the idea of legalized recreational marijuana, and I'll tell you why. I think, first of all, legalization of recreational marijuana is a very complex issue, whereas I think medical marijuana is relatively simple. I think that certain disorders have evidence to support the use of marijuana and some don't. But legalization is complex, so there are excellent arguments on both sides of the issue. Personally, I come down on the side of being in favor of it simply because I think that as Americans, there are many things that we do that may be harmful, but we have the ability to choose to do them or not. And I don't like the idea of taking that away. That's really the core issue, along with the idea that the fact of the matter is most people in the United States want to have legalized recreational marijuana. So for that reason, I would rather think about ways in which we can meet their desires while limiting risk. So again, we talked about how regulations have come up short in many, many ways, and I would like to believe that we could craft regulations that could legalize the recreational use of marijuana while limiting risk. I'm still optimistic about it. And there are many other issues, and maybe some questions will come up about those.
Yeah,
and I'm actually in favor of that.
I didn't mean to misstate your, but there was a, I was looking at this passage that said, if forced to vote right now, I would not support legalization of the recreational use of marijuana, one of the reasons being concerns over drugged driving.
Absolutely. So again, to clarify, you know, there are ways that you can do this. One of the key issues against legalized recreational marijuana is the idea that right now there is not a 0.0 0.08 blood alcohol content equivalent for marijuana, nor is their ability to test for it in the field. So in Colorado, they're doing the best they can by drawing blood, but it's just not as feasible as the breathalyzer is for alcohol. So yes, in concept, I'm in favor of legalization. However, I would like to iron out some of these issues, have certain things and safeguards in place before we do it.
I get it.
So you're absolutely right. I think that at this point, in many cases, the policy is ahead of the science in these issues, and I think in the four states plus the district that have legalized marijuana, right now the policy is ahead of the science. But, you know, there's time. And, for example, in Massachusetts, the legalization will probably be on the ballot in 2016, and I would like to believe that that offers an opportunity to get a head start and to try to get some answers that will help us do this safely if we're going to do it.
All right, let's take some calls. We have Rich in Milwaukee with us first. Hi, Rich.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 57. I've been smoking weed since the eighth grade. I thought, you know, that by the time I was really old in my 30s, it would all be legalized. And I know Nancy Reagan, my opinion is that she changed everything, right or wrong, depending on how you look at this. I think a lot of this has a similarity to the whole issue with alcohol and prohibition, and how the country can actually make money. You tax it, you can't stop it, and so forth. In the black market, you're going to take a lot of the oomph out of there, and we can redirect some of our crime and crime fighting and police to other things. But the question I have is the drug testing. I'm looking for a job again, and I'm taking a break, basically, and I've recently got offered a position in Colorado, and I'm not going to move because I want to stay in Milwaukee, but I was wondering, how do they do this? How do they drug test? Do they still look for the THC? I'm of the opinion, if somebody says, well, we're going to drug test you, I'm just going to put it on the table. You know, that's my own personal choice.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, we've had a number of Facebook comments about this, too. And do you want to talk about drug testing and marijuana, Dr. Hill?
Yep, so it's a very complicated issue. So marijuana is stored in the fat. So if you're using marijuana today, let's say, you're very likely to have marijuana on a drug test as THC for the next month or so. So the question becomes, you know, how does that affect employment opportunities? And right now, the drug testing issues are really up to a particular employer, so they can be as strict or not about how they want to go about doing it. And I certainly think that that's one of the key issues that comes into play when talking about legalization. Does the punishment fit the crime? If you have a positive THC drug test, you know, does that mean that you shouldn't be working? Well, you know, that's hard to know. Again, there's a difference between using marijuana occasionally like you would a glass of wine, which is the way that most Americans use it, and using it every day. I mean, there's a difference there. So I think that's certainly a problem in many ways, and perhaps legalizing it or changing the way that you do drug testing and trying to test for amounts of marijuana, you know, maybe that's another way to go about it. But I certainly think that the way that things are right now is not ideal in the realm of drug testing.
Let's go next to Marge in Milwaukee. Hi, Marge.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You mentioned before that marijuana might have, or does have, adverse effects on the teenage brain. And I've noticed an upsurge in people over 60 now smoking marijuana, my age group. Most of us, because we smoked it when we were young, and all of a sudden it seems like, oh, we can smoke it again. But I'm wondering whether or not marijuana, very similar to teens, doesn't have an adverse effect on the aging brain.
Well, I certainly don't think that would be the case. I mean, you're not going to get any you could still have problems if you're using regularly. But certainly, as I like to point out, there's quite a difference in risk between using it when your brain is developing versus not. One key point, though, is that, you know, you may have had experience with marijuana in the 60s or 70s or 80s. The marijuana of those days is very different from the marijuana that you'd get now. It's much, much stronger. So average THC content, 60s and 70s and 80s, generally 1 to 2% average THC content now. 13% and probably climbing. So that's one thing to be careful about. But importantly, I like to emphasize the fact that if you're talking about using it once a week or occasionally, that sort of thing, probably not a lot of harm there. There isn't a lot of data to show that that is harmful. The thing that we're talking about is regular use, daily use, especially among young people, as being harmful, and that's what we're trying to educate people about.
Yeah, what is the that daily use of young people? What's that doing to their brain?
So the studies show that you can have cognitive difficulties. There have been imaging studies that show that young people that are using marijuana regularly are recruiting different parts of their brain in order to get the same amount of work done, kind of like running their engines in overdrive. So that's probably not a good long-term strategy. There was a study that was done by Madeline Meyer at Duke, where they followed over 1,000 New Zealanders over time. They did neuropsychological testing at ages 13 and 38, and they showed that early regular use of marijuana led to up to an 8-point decline in IQ. There have been some debates about the veracity of that information, but it was published in a top journal. So I think that even most pro-marijuana people will agree that use among young people is not a good idea. In addition to those cognitive difficulties, you can have worsening anxiety, worsening depression. And I think I mentioned that you could precipitate psychotic disorder if you're using marijuana. So clearly, I think the messages are different, which is one of the reasons why this is complicated, right? I mean, we're talking about using daily, not sporadically, and then there's a difference in risk between younger people and older people. So again, when people are trying to paint with a broad brush with marijuana, it's not very effective, nor is it accurate.
Yeah, so the older people, they're not going to, hasten any memory issues or that kind of thing.
Well, I think that depends mostly on how often they're doing it and what the dose is, how strong is the marijuana they're using. Mm-hmm. The jury's still out there, but again, the kind of use that I'm okay with is really using it on the weekends occasionally, as you would having a couple of glasses of wine. So there is a difference. As with anything, there are medicines that can be used very effectively, and they can be misused as well. It really depends about how you go about doing it.
Yeah. Let's go to Meg in Oshkosh. Hi, Meg.
Hi. I understand that a bill was passed in Wisconsin for the use of medical marijuana for children with severe seizure disorders. I know I have a child who has autism and severe behavioral issues and self-injury. Wondering if this would help my son and if this bill would ever be expanded more.
Well, you may not know about that particular, but I remember that being debated, but I'm not sure it was passed into law. But what about marijuana and seizures of with children, Dr. Hill?
I think it's a great idea to talk about because, again, I'm a big proponent of cannabinoids. And so talking about using marijuana or cannabidiol, one of the components or cannabinoids of marijuana, for epilepsy or seizure disorders is one of the examples of the promise of this class of medications. So there isn't a lot of data to support that use right now in terms of published studies, but there are companies that are working on that very feverishly, and so there are clinical trials that are ongoing, and so yes, that's something that I think is a good idea in terms of expanding certain medical marijuana laws to allow patients who have these disorders to get into these clinical trials. So that's exciting. You mentioned your son with soft tissue injury and self-injury. That's also an area where there could be some promise. Again, it's very early, but there is legitimate reason to wonder if THC, for example, could be used to prevent agitation. And so there are some exciting trials that have been proposed around the country from some colleagues of mine, for example, where they're asking the question of whether or not dronabinol or THC may limit some of the agitation that people see in older patients, for example. So I think there's a lot of promise there, but I would rather have the rigorous scientific evaluation of marijuana and these cannabinoids in certain conditions before we launch into giving marijuana to people when
it's
not
ready. Got it. I'm sorry, we have news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Dr. Kevin Hill. He is the author of Marijuana, the Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. We are talking about marijuana as the debate over legalization and or decriminalization of marijuana continues, getting some of the pros and cons, the evidence for and against marijuana usage, the controversies around marijuana laws, and we'll talk a little bit more about the challenges of treating addictions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Dr. Kevin Hill is an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard's McLean Hospital in Belmont, Massachusetts, and he is an addiction consultant with several professional sports organizations as well. Let's talk a little bit about the addiction side of this. When do we know if we or someone has a problem with smoking pot, Dr. Hill?
Well, it's hard to know. It's really based upon really having a good sense of what is normal for somebody and when they're deviating from what's normal. If somebody, if a young person has played soccer for 10 years and they, by the time they get to sophomore year of high school, they give it up, you know, it's worth asking, you know, what is that about? If they change their friends, if their school performance drops, it's really just having your antenna up in looking for these types of things. But it's difficult, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, is to talk about, you know, sort of what to look for, and then, importantly, what to do about it if you think that somebody has a problem. Ideally, you just want to have a conversation with a loved one and say, look, I'm concerned about you. I think you need an evaluation, and then you just try to get them in to talk to somebody who knows a few things about addiction.
Yeah. You know, growing up in the 60s and 70s, my parents would say, you know, don't smoke cigarettes, don't smoke pot, don't smoke or don't drink beer. And that doesn't do a whole lot of good, does it?
Well, it depends. I mean, again, the messages and how you live your life are important with your children. And I think that, like it or not, your role models. Definitely, there's a certain amount of experimentation that's going to happen. But the degree to which it occurs will depend a lot about the messages that you impart and also sort of what is the culture in your particular community. So that's one of the reasons why we spend a lot of time in communities trying to educate them about marijuana, also alcohol, and what the potential dangers are.
Yeah. I'm thinking, well, we have a lot more callers, but I'm just based on, I don't have children, but nieces and nephews in high schools today, even one who I truly believe is not even experimenting with smoking pot says everybody's doing it. Do we think this is that widespread?
Well, that's a great question and something that I wonder about. Really, the national statistics suggest that about 30% of high schoolers in the last year or have used marijuana, and I have to wonder if those numbers are accurate. I can tell you that recently I gave a talk, and a principal of a local high school said, look, if we kicked out everybody that was caught using marijuana here, we wouldn't have any students here. So I wonder if those numbers are a bit low. Absolutely, there are many, many patients that I see who come in and say, look, everybody is doing it. So it's everywhere. The percentages are hard to pinpoint, but what is clear is that this is an issue that needs to be dealt with and dealt with appropriately. As I mentioned earlier, it's not only what the message is, but how you deliver it that will depend upon how successful you are.
Marcus on Facebook says, working in K through 12 education, it should be apparent how the current laws do nothing to keep marijuana out of the hands of children. It is easier to get than alcohol. Next, the laws in place are far more dangerous to the individual than the plant itself is. It's ruining countless lives and families through arrests and convictions. You want to address that?
I think Marcus makes some excellent points that I agree wholeheartedly with. I think one of the key differences between me and some of the other people that are interested in marijuana is that I recognize that the current state of marijuana, the ways that laws are written, for example, Marcus mentions the increased incarceration, possessions, and how they disproportionately affects certain racial and ethnic minorities, I think that's an issue that could be addressed with legalization, for example. Clearly, the punishment doesn't fit the crime in many of these cases, and because in some states that have legalized marijuana, things haven't gone so well, there are different ways to look at that. You can look at it and say, look, they've had problems in Colorado, we don't want to try it. Or you can say, well, this is what they've done well, this is what they haven't done well. We need to take what they've done well and do that, and take what they haven't done well and improve upon it. That's how I look at it. I would rather try to do this and do it in a responsible way while trying to limit risk.
Let's go to Leslie in Amberg. Hi, Leslie.
Good morning. Thank you, Joy, for having this subject matter on your program, and thank Dr. Hill for his comments. I have a little bit different point of view here in regards to industrial use of hemp. For example, we could be using hemp instead of corn to fuel our cars, because hemp actually enriches the soil when it grows, and we could be using it for a paper industry because it requires a lot less chemicals to rottenize for the paper-making process, and it also will be good for making Blandex instead of wood chips. It provides a stronger product.
And yeah, and Leslie, because I don't want to get too far off, folks, but I don't know if you know much about legalizing hemp for industrial or agricultural use, Dr. Hill.
I don't know much about that, but I have to say that, you know, perhaps you're getting it to the point of the fact that marijuana is still a federally illegal narcotic. It's a Schedule I substance, and for that reason, it's very difficult to use it either medicinally or perhaps for these industrial purposes, and that's one of the issues that has been at the fore lately. Should marijuana be rescheduled? And I think that's a legitimate question to ask.
Yeah, in fact, that has come up as the argument not to legalize growing of hemp in Wisconsin, which used to be a big crop, because it would be too hard to distinguish, a legal marijuana farm and an illegal one. So let's go to Cliff in Appleton. Hi, Cliff.
Good morning. I was wondering if you could talk about the difference between marijuana and synthetic marijuana, because I've read some reports that it causes emergency room visits, psychosis, agitation, and the formulas change on the synthetic marijuana. It's more difficult to test for. How dangerous is it in your opinion?
So synthetic marijuana, great question. It's very dangerous, largely because you don't know what you're using or what you're getting. So most synthetic marijuana is made in China. The DEA has worked to make certain forms of synthetic marijuana illegal, so the forms just keep changing. They make little tweaks to the chemical format. One of the difficulties with synthetic marijuana is that they take these synthetic cannabinoids and spray it onto plant material, potpourri, and what can happen is you can have higher concentrations of this cannabinoid material in certain areas of the plant. We call them hot spots, and so it's very difficult to really know what you're getting, and sometimes users get a far stronger drug than they're expecting, and that leads them to the ER.
We had a caller who couldn't stand the line who says she drinks 2 to 3 hemp protein powder shakes a day. Does that contain any THC? Is this healthy? Do you know?
Well, it's hard to know exactly what is contained in certain nutraceuticals or over-the-counter products. I would imagine, potentially it may be sold as something that has THC. Is that beneficial for you? It depends what you're trying to use it for, really, and what dose you're actually getting. So it's kind of a complicated matter in that sense, and it's really hard to know unless we knew exactly what she was using it for.
We just lost a caller, too, who wanted to ask a question that I guess has been one of the arguments against legalization for a long time, that marijuana is a gateway drug, that that if you start with marijuana, pretty soon you're going to be shooting up heroin. We got a big enough problem with heroin in this state. Dr. Hill, what's the truth to that?
Well, I think they're really separate issues. So is marijuana a gateway drug? It is a gateway drug in the sense that in a program like ours where we treat people with addictions, usually from 12 to 15, they start using either marijuana or nicotine or alcohol. So it's not only marijuana. If you're using one of those three things at an early age, yes, you're more likely to develop problems moving forward. You're not automatically going to have those issues, but you're certainly in a riskier position. So we worry about that. One of the difficulties is that if you have 5 young people using marijuana, I can't predict which one of those five is going to go on to have significant difficulties. So that's why I want to treat all five seriously and try to figure out what we can do to make sure that they're not using. However, importantly, even though marijuana may be a gateway drug, legalizing marijuana may not change the way that that occurs. It may not lead to an increase in addiction necessarily. There are a lot of things about marijuana that we've thought that haven't exactly been borne out by research. And so, for example, people have thought that medical marijuana laws would lead to increased use among young people, and that hasn't necessarily been the case. So the jury's still out, but it hasn't been the case yet. And so if you do these things in a responsible way, if you write regulations that work, that limit, try to limit access as much as you can and limit risk, I think you can do them successfully. So one thing doesn't necessarily mean another in this case.
Katie on Facebook says, I work in education. I see how pot and other drugs destroy lives. Many of these people end up unemployed and relying on public assistance. It will only get worse if it's made legal. There are too many people who are not smart enough to know to not do drugs with the government preventing them from doing it. We only have a minute or so to go. What about that concern?
Well, I think it's a legitimate concern. So, again, they're arguments on both sides that are excellent arguments, and I think they need to be considered very, very thoughtfully. I don't necessarily agree with that, though. I think that, again, I want to educate people. I believe in the freedom of choice among adults, certainly, and I'd like to believe that if people are more educated about marijuana, they're going to be able to make better choices about whether or not they should use, about whether or not they should vote for these things. So I tend to have faith in people, in their abilities, rather than trying to over-regulate things with the government. And as I mentioned earlier, the way that, unfortunately, we've done these things before in terms of regulating these policies hasn't been great. So I'd like to think that we could do it in a better way moving forward.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Joy.
Kevin Hill is the author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. Kevin Hill is an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard's McLean Hospital in Belmont, Massachusetts. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Kayla Blado, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We will have our Week in Review with two guests from different perspectives coming up next. Coming up at this time on Monday, it's our State Capitol Report. We'll talk about some of the top issues making news at the State Capitol. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.